We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Well, again, welcome everyone. My name is Christine Fox, and I'm the Deputy Executive Director for CETA. And we are here today to talk about state leadership around broadband implementation, specifically related to our most recent report on broadband, the Broadband Imperative 2, Equitable Access for Learning, which was published in September of 2016. I'm excited today to have a group of state leaders. I will be sharing some information about CETA's work around broadband implementation. And then from the Michigan team, we have Amory Mapes and Dave Childs. They will be sharing how Michigan is supporting broadband implementation across the state, as well as we have Kurt Kiefer. He is the assistant superintendent at the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. And Kurt will be sharing how in Wisconsin, they have been supporting their schools and districts to help ensure seamless Wi-Fi and broadband access. And so this is our agenda. Apart from our introductions and a little bit about CETA, for those of you that are not familiar with our organization, I will be sharing about CETA as well as the Broadband Imperative 2 work. And then we will have both states, Michigan and Wisconsin, sharing their perspectives and then leave some time for dialogue at the end of the session and some next steps for all of you. And CETA would like to thank both AT&T and EdWeb for their support of this. Our work is dependent on the support of others, and they have both been great supporters of CETA and our initiatives to impact student learning. So a little bit about CETA, for those of you not familiar, we are a 15-year-old nonprofit. Our members are State Department of Education digital learning leaders. They are from a variety of offices and state departments of ed, including educational technology, digital learning, personalized learning. We also have leaders from assessment, special education, the various title programs. And we also have CIOs and members of state networks that support our work. We provide resources for leaders. All CETA resources are free and open to the public, and they're actually openly licensed. We advocate for policy and practice to support digital learning opportunities, and we provide the opportunity for states to interact with each other as well as with the private sector. CETA, over our history, has published multiple resources, several annually. Most recently, related to broadband, apart from the Broadband Imperative 2 that we're going to talk about today, is the precursor to this work, the State K-12 Broadband Leadership Report. We also published in 2015 with Common Sense Kids Action, the E-Rate Modernization Toolkit, as well as our kind of lead up to this report, the Broadband Imperative, which was published in 2012. That work, the Broadband Imperative from 2012, was actually adopted. The recommendations from that were adopted by the FCC in the E-Rate Modernization Order from 2015. As related to instructional materials, we have a variety of resources, including most recently in June, we published Navigating the Digital Shift 2017. That is an update from our 2015 paper. In February of this year, we published a guide to quality instructional materials, an online toolkit. And you should see some links being posted here in the chat shortly to all of these resources that are available again on our CETA's website. We do host the Guide to Digital Learning that was published in 2015 as well. So a little bit of background from the Broadband Imperative 2. This work came about based on feedback from members and state leaders. So we conducted several in-person meetings at our events. We met at sometimes weekly online and using collaborative documents. We realized about the spring of 2016 that we had so much information we were going to split into two reports. So we had the first report, which was the state K-12 leadership, and that supported then the launching and release of the Broadband Imperative 2. And we did also include folks from variety of organizations to review and participate within that work. The State K-12 Broadband Leadership Report provides an overview of how state leaders are able to support districts and schools, demonstrates a variety of models that states get to achieve the path of high-speed broadband. Every state is very different. You'll hear from two unique states today. Although they're neighbors, they have different approaches to how to support access across the state for broadband and the importance of those leaders supporting the digital transition. For those of you not familiar with the report, in the executive summary, we really highlight the shift in learning models. For all CETA members, it's more about the boxes and wires and more than, sorry, the boxes and wires, but more about the learning and how changing and teaching and learning must take place and how digital materials and broadband access can support that. We have several scenarios of what seamless high-speed broadband access can provide and what students, teachers, and administrators have the opportunity to do when they have unlimited access and the access that they need so that they're able to conduct their work. And then we have four recommendations that I'll jump into shortly, a summary and next steps. And the appendices is actually a great resource in this report. We highlight our methodology, highlight federal programs. We have a variety of resources, exemplars from schools, districts, and states, and then a pretty comprehensive glossary as well. So as I mentioned, the shift in learning models, CETA really advocates for personalized deeper learning experiences, the idea that students are developers of content and not just consumers of content, and the opportunity to participate with hands-on digital learning tools. In the report, we mentioned the fact that seamless access is so critical, and you know, we believe that teachers should be able to go into a classroom, turn on the lights, and also have broadband necessary to conduct their lessons, never wondering, you know, do we have enough broadband to do that? So we hope that as we move forward, we know there are challenges across the country and in specific states around rural areas or physical limitations on that access. And each state is working as diligently as possible to provide that seamless access across their state. We have four primary recommendations in this paper. The first is to increase infrastructure to support student-centered learning. The second, designing infrastructure to meet capacity targets. So we do have capacity targets in recommendation one. They are an update from the 2012 report. And in within those capacity targets, if you are familiar with our 2012 work, it is going to provide the opportunity for extremely small and extremely large districts, which was different from the 2012. We also talk about the fact that these are recommended targets. Every locale has unique needs, and we encourage you to take those into consideration, but districts should be planning effectively both for today and in the future. The other recommendation, number three, is about out-of-school access. Although typically states and districts are not providing directly that access, they have the opportunity to support leadership in that area, make families aware of different opportunities of secure access that is safe, and then potentially in the home as well. And then finally, what we're going to talk about today, leveraging state resources to increase broadband. And we're going to hear great examples of what states are doing. So specific to the recommendation four, we have several kind of subcategories of that, leveraging state resources to increase broadband access. And those buckets are providing funding to support broadband as well as potentially the E-rate match as needed, having policies to support the adoption and deployment, creating and expanding networks based on how their state is organized, and then utilizing innovative purchasing options is also a way states can support access. So specific to direct funding, nearly two-thirds of states reported they provide direct state funding for broadband. This comes in a variety of manners. Some states have a line item in their budget. Other states have their own state-level universal fund where they provide additional broadband support. Multiple states have created line items and state support to apply for the E-rate match for special construction. Alabama is one of those. And then we encourage that all leaders across the state, policymakers, via the from the governor's office to the Department of Education, to the state broadband leads, should be coordinating together to help make these things possible. We also encourage policies to support the deployment. Nearly 60 states have broadband policies around that access. Some of those include states like Oregon, which they're in kind of the earlier stages of helping this happen, but they have a broadband commission with leaders from across state agencies. Other states have specific policies, including Pennsylvania, where they are require in public access to broadband. And policies take in different forms and are related to different areas in each state and depending on the level of state level control and local control, but we encourage that overall. Then create or expand state broadband networks for economies of scale. So more than one half of the states have some type of centrally coordinated statewide broadband network. Some states are in the process of planning those. And other states that can't make that happen are working on regional consortia or using intermediate units to help support broadband implementation. And then finally, the opportunity to use innovative purchasing models. Multiple states have consider different models, typically via consortia or regional units, to both decrease the cost and increase capacity. Most significantly, New Jersey paved the way with a statewide purchasing consortia. And as you can see here from the slides, there was an estimated $89 million in savings and increased bandwidth by about 150%. Wyoming also coordinated a statewide procurement, and they were able to significantly increase their capacity by about 96%. So lots of things happening across the country. There are multiple examples in the report itself, but I'm not going to take much more time now because I really want you to hear from both Michigan and Wisconsin about the great things that they're doing. So first, I'd like to introduce Dave Childs. He's the project manager for the statewide educational network. This includes the role of coordinating with the K-12 community. He has worked on various projects in the telecom industry, and we're happy to share that he has a good working relationship with the Department of Education. Amory Mapes is a consultant for the Office of Data and Information Management for the Michigan Department of Ed. I will say she is also a newly elected member of the CETA Board of Directors, and she has been an active member both in the broadband and E-rate community of CETA membership, as well as the instructional materials side of things. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and turn over to the Michigan team and let you hear more from them.
Thanks, Christine. This is Anne-Marie, and I'm going to kind of lead things off here and then turn it over to Dave. But we're really excited to share our story, how Michigan has taken, a unique approach to broadband connectivity in our state. So we wanted to set the stage by giving you some context of our education system in Michigan. We have 56 education service agencies, and some of you might know those as BOCES, if you're from New York, or ISDs, as we call them here in Michigan. And those kind of sit over our 540-plus districts. We actually have more like 800 when you add in all of our public school academies. So those PSAs down there that you see on the list, we lump those into the category because they're each acting like their own district. And we actually have over 800-plus individual districts in Michigan with over 3,000 buildings. So as you can see, that is quite a lot, and this is all over 1.5 million students. We also have a very diverse state in terms of geography, so you can see there, some of you might be familiar with Michigan, but we have an upper peninsula that has been fairly isolated from downstate for you know, many years, but the power of technology has made them a lot more connected to the rest of the state. So in Michigan, our broadband, the broadband approach that we have taken has been legislatively led, but also a grassroots effort. So Michigan is a local control state. And so each district may or may not work with their ESA in terms of their connectivity and broadband. And due to necessity, as I mentioned before, Michigan ESAs, particularly those in the Upper Peninsula and in rural locations in Michigan, have already been connected for years out of necessity. So beginning in 2013, the Michigan legislature appropriated $50 million for the Technology Readiness Infrastructure Grant, which was competitive grants to improve technology infrastructure for the implementation of online assessments. There are over 10 activities that have been included in TRIG, and I'll go into those briefly in a moment. But as part of the Technology Readiness Infrastructure Grant, 5 regional consortia were formed in our state, made up of our ESAs. And so while legislatively funded, this initiative, TRIG, put the impetus for change in the hands of the consortia and ESAs in our state. So this is how the State Education Network began, but I'd also like to briefly touch on some of the other activities of TRIG. We also have activities such as device purchasing, which brings us back to a few slides earlier when Christine was sharing some of the innovative approaches to purchasing power that states have taken. So in a local control state, we're able to maximize purchasing across the board in terms of devices to ready our districts for online assessments. And we've also taken an approach with some data hubs and bringing, aligning all of our districts and offering them the opportunity to come onto some data networks that have provided for a standard that allows data to be shared back and forth more easily. We also have another activity, and that is E-rate, which has been very integral in bringing down the price of internet access and connectivity in our state, and has been very active in supporting the work of the Michigan State Education Network. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dave.
Thanks, Anne Marie, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. We're pretty excited about what we're doing here in Michigan, and we appreciate the opportunity to share. A little bit more on the background. This first slide that you're looking at is a slide of the logical lay of the land of the existing regional networks. As Anne Marie mentioned, we've had ESAs in Michigan for many decades, and over the past 20 years or so, each of them has developed their own fiber infrastructure, predominantly to connect with the districts in their service area. This map was developed through a web-based tool that we developed so that we could start gathering information on exactly where each district building was located, precisely where the ESAs are located relative to the fiber, and to get a clear indication of where the fiber connections are already in place between the ESAs and their districts and buildings within the areas they serve. As you can see, it's a kind of a star network spread throughout the state. So our objective in terms of developing a plan for connecting all the buildings in the state was to start with where we're at. And that mapping tool that we developed and rolled out to each of the tech directors at each of the ESAs helped us gather that preliminary information we needed for developing the overall design of the network. So our first objective, as outlined in the TRIG grant that Anne Marie was describing, was to connect each of those ESAs, the Department of Education, our Department of Management, Technology, and Budget, and other stakeholders got together and said, let's make that the first step in getting our buildings and our districts ready for online assessments. So our phase one of the state network, again, was to get each of those ESAs connected on a fiber backbone that would provide an intranet for each of the districts that were in turn connected to those ESAs to target. And the objective is this would create a SEN that would allow online assessments and other high-value online activities to be accessed securely at higher bandwidths and more importantly, to lower costs so that we could get access to basically bulk billing and bulk bidding for internet access. So the result would be an opportunity to facilitate a greater sharing between those ESAs and other related services. So the funding for this, let me go back a couple slides, came from three rounds of the TRIG grant. And this portion of it, these dollars were just dedicated to the state education network, not the the other activities that Anne-Marie had mentioned. But in 2012 and 13, the legislators provided about $19.3 million toward the SEN. The next year, another 10. And then the final round in 14-15 was another two. So we're working with a pot of about $32 million. And in terms of the way we're allocating those dollars, roughly half of that, before any E-rate discounts, will be dedicated to getting the infrastructure up and running in the first year. The other half is going to be dedicated to ongoing operations with the addition of some other resources that I'll talk about in a moment. So a note about E-rate. I mentioned pre and post in the title of this slide. When we first started this initiative back in 12 and 13, the objective, based on input from the technology directors around the state, was to make sure that we could control as much of the infrastructure as possible. The technology directors at the ESA level had been used to building and managing their own infrastructure. They didn't want to lose that control if we developed interconnections between each of the ESAs around the state. So the objective was to provide as much control, continued control, as possible. And because E-rate does have some hoops that you need to jump through, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with those, we didn't start the project with E-rate in mind. In terms of cost management, we were focused mostly on collaboration with county governments, local municipalities, state government. State of Michigan, for example, has 850 sites around the mitten that they provide connections to. We saw opportunities to collaborate with them. But as you might guess, it took quite a bit of time to begin developing those collaborations, developing the cost-sharing strategies, identifying shared connectivity strategies. So in order to move ahead more quickly, we switched to E-rate funding. And that's obviously helping our budget quite a bit, and it also helped speed up the implementation because it took a lot of the uncertainty on funding off the table. So there are three elements in terms of E-rate funding that we're focused on. One is the initial transport, the backbone itself, getting that in place. We were just awarded a funding commitment decision from USAC for $9.5 million for that initiative. In addition, we've got funding requests in for ongoing transport costs, the annual cost for managing the services from vendors across the state education network. And then finally, we've got requests for funding for internet access that we have on the table right now. For fiscal year 2016, as I mentioned before, we just received received a funding commitment for $9.5 million for transport. And then ongoing internet access applications are in process now. So connecting to leverage resources. Again, back to our fundamental strategy, it's to leverage as much infrastructure that already exists as we possibly can. Our first step out the gate was that mapping initiative, which was in the first slide that I discussed. And the design initiative is to connect all of those existing infrastructure pieces into a seamless digital path throughout the state. To do this, as you might guess, we got to take this elephant in chunks. The first phase of connecting all the ESAs was just completed last week. We have optical paths in existence between all 55 ESAs in the state. And we're working on the routing protocols and strategies for each one of those now. Now that that is in place, the next phase two, will focus on any of the districts and or buildings throughout the state that don't have connections to their ESAs. In many cases, we will connect those districts or ESAs directly to their ESAs, that their service areas that they're in. In some cases, it'll be more cost effective to connect them directly to a service provider. In other cases, it may make more sense to connect them to a neighboring ESA. But that phase two piece is just beginning to get underway, and our first goal there is to develop a comprehensive high-level budget on what we think those last mile connections to all those unconnected buildings will be before we move ahead with that initiative. A little bit about how our governance is structured. In order to manage all of the contracts and assets of the State Educational Network, we established a 501c called the Michigan Statewide Educational Network, or MISN. The fiscal agent of MISN is one of our ESAs, Genesee ISD. The board of MISN is made up of one representative from each of 10 geographic areas, and you can see the list there on the right, and the map of the 10 geographic areas on the map on the right. It's one ESA superintendent from each of those areas sits on the board. In addition to that, we have an ex officio position from the Department of Education. Since the collaboration between Department of Education and the State Education Network and TRIG in general has been extremely tight and extremely supportive going both ways, we want to continue that by ensuring that input and governance can be provided through the board by Department of Education. Well, in addition to the board, we have two groups that act as provide input and advisory. The bottom right, you'll see the SEN Advisory, the State Education Network Advisory Group. And this is a group of representatives from each of the consortia that Anne Marie had mentioned before, the five consortia, and that map is on the left there, that colored map. We meet on a monthly basis. I provide input on issues and things that I need feedback from. Once final decisions are made about strategy, budgets, those decisions are carried over to a steering committee. That steering committee, in turn, is made up of representatives from those five consortia. And they kind of give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down on our recommendations coming out of advisory. And then once it gets through those two groups, it goes to the MISN board for final approval. And that ensures that we've got input from all around the state and ensures that everybody's got a voice in exactly the direction that the State Education Network takes. A little bit more on how we're beginning to use it. First, we have five regional locations or aggregation points that make up the backbone that operates at currently at 100 gig throughout the state. And currently, each of those backbone locations is providing certain services for data integration. And that's one of the first services that we want to be sure we get rolled out over the intranet, is access to those data integration services. The objective of those data integration services is to ensure that we've got accurate and reliable, secure access to student information systems and tools that help manage integration between student information systems and other software within each of the districts. So that's one of the first objectives. In addition to that, we're looking at continuing our relationship with Merit Networks. Our Merit Network, which many of you have heard of, it's also a nonprofit organization. It's the longest running regional research education network in the country. It owns and operates over 3,800 miles of fiber throughout Michigan, and it's our primary service provider for the services that connect each of the ESAs around the state. Since its board is made up of universities. It's focused on educational resources, including their anchor institutions, which are 12 of Michigan's universities. They are a recipient of ERA funds that have also helped them build out their infrastructure, including much of it in the Upper Peninsula. So it's been an extremely valuable partner in ensuring that we make the most of existing infrastructure. And its merit mission is to strengthen its members through collaboration, innovation, and information technology. And that's precisely how they integrate so effectively with our network. This is Merit's network, not the fiber infrastructure that makes up the SEN specifically, but Merit's overall backbone infrastructure they have in Michigan, and why we wanted to partner closely with them in getting our services in place. A little bit more on the MISON and its transport backbone. As you can see from the previous slide, we chose Merit because of the infrastructure that they already bring to the table. They already had about 50% of the ESAs, one way or another, connected to their backbone. Their education and research focus matches the focus of K-12. They have a deep bench in technology expertise, not only in implementing outside plant and managing outside plant, but also in routing and security. They are an E-rate service provider, and they're familiar with the nuances of the E-rate program, and they've got solid design and implementation resources that we've been able to leverage in putting our infrastructure together. You saw on a previous slide that I had the mitten with five aggregation points. Those aggregation points are represented by these rectangles in the map you see in this slide. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 aggregation points, and each of the ESAs in the state is connected to one of those aggregation points. Each one is connected at 10 gig to the backbone, again, that's currently operating at 100 gig. We will be providing statewide internet access through these connection points, these aggregation points. We're going out the gate with our initial toe in the water for internet access services, with a provider that's going to connect into the Oakland ESA, down on the lower right there, providing 60 gig of bandwidth to a half a dozen initial users of internet access that we're using as our guinea pigs in this first year that the SEN is up and running. Fundamentally, if you're familiar with Michigan, the southeast area of Michigan is where the population density and more than half of our student base is. Our SEN backbone is going to help us leverage the buying power of that area in Michigan where many providers compete. We're going to be able to take the buying power of that part of the state and spread it to the rest of the state, driving down our costs for internet access and resource sharing for everybody from Copper Harbor in the Upper Peninsula down to Benton Harbor in the southwest parts of the state. And finally, again, keeping up with the demand for bandwidth, preparing for the future, speed, security, reliability, sharing resources, bulk buying of internet access and filtering, voice services, data storage, sharing software systems. That's the objective in terms of the services that we're going to take from a regional basis and continue spreading to the rest of the state. So with that, I think we'll open it up to any questions you might have for either Anne-Marie or myself.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave and Anne-Marie. We'll take a couple questions that I noted in the chat, and then we want to make sure to give Kurt and the Wisconsin team enough time. So one was specific to Anne-Marie about funding. Does the funding of the student data platforms come from money from the legislation, or is there another source?
Is this specific to the Michigan Data Hubs?
I believe so. It was a chat question. So
yes. So if you do look at the Technology Readiness Infrastructure Grant website, and I believe, Christine, we passed that link over to you, the 22itrig.org.
Yep.
Yep. If you look on there, you can see all of those activities were funded through the state legislature. And so the data hubs are one of those activities, yes.
Great. Okay, and then there's another question for Dave specifically. When you're thinking about a state network, what concerns did perhaps the schools express, and how were those addressed? Did you have to guess create buy-in or?
Yeah, in a word, control. I mentioned early in a couple of the slides, the biggest concern that they had was continuing the same kind of control that they have over their regional networks. They wanted that type of control to establish circuits, virtual private networks, implement regional initiatives. And I think we addressed that fairly effectively through our governance structure. But it's an ongoing message. It's a continuing effort to reach out and make sure that we're listening to all voices and that we address regional concerns. So I think we've been very successful so far, but we need to keep our eye on the ball on that, just to make sure that everyone knows their concerns can be addressed.
Great. And then a last quick question. How do you see long-term legislative funding? I know you mentioned the previous 3 years, I think it was, that you listed. Do you see ongoing long-term funding support?
Yes. As a matter of fact, from the standpoint of the state education network, we're constantly building our list of positive things we can point to. That the legislatures have been able to accomplish because they provided that initial funding with TRIG. There have been, across the board, many hard dollar savings, not just from the SEN and internet access, but device purchasing, the efficiencies in data management. So we expect that we're going to have a long, positive relationship with the legislators in keeping the funding going because of the success of what they've already provided.
Yes.
Great.
And we've been successful in terms of the online assessments. 98% of our districts were able to assess online last year. And so we've been incredibly successful there.
Great. Well, thank you. We encourage you to stay on. We'll have some Q&A right before we close out as well. And lots of exciting things happening in Michigan, especially with some of your challenging geography, for sure. So as I'm introducing Kurt, I just wanted to offer the opportunity for a quick chat question. How has robust broadband access impacted learning in your state, district, and school? Because we're hearing about some of the logistics today, but we're also know that it's important that the ultimate goal here is to impact teaching and learning. And so with that, I would like to introduce Kurt Kiefer. He is the Assistant State Superintendent for the Division of Libraries and Technology, the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. He is considered the state's Department of Ed's CIO, as well as the state librarian. So lots of hats to wear there, and busy. So we appreciate his opportunity to join us today. Prior to joining the department, he was the Madison Metropolitan School District CIO for 16 years. And so he has background in both the private sector as well as the district level. And now he is leading things at the state. So I don't want to take up too much time, but we want to hear about the exciting things going on in Wisconsin with BadgerNet and more. So turning it over to you, Kurt.
Thanks, Christine. I appreciate it. One of the things that I was a little nervous about getting in on this particular webinar is the fact that we have a series of different division meetings throughout the year, and we have one every summer that we always hold, which provides a little opportunity for a little fun. It was running right up against this, so I had just the last minute to try to do a tech check with Regina, but I managed to get that in, and so hopefully I'm broadcasting just fine. But one of the things we do in our little division meeting in the summer, which we affectionately refer to as the brat luck, you can imagine from being from Wisconsin, we eat a few brats around here. We have a lovely little lazy river fountain outside our state office building, and we do a little competition that involves these things. We have a rubber ducky race every summer. That's what kind of caught me a little bit off guard trying to get into the webinar, but it's a lot of fun. But it's even more fun to be able to share what we're doing as relates to educational technology and specifically broadband kinds of interesting ways across the state. Fascinating to hear the story from Michigan. They're doing some wonderful things. I think I'll be able to share a few things as well. One of the most important things, though, that I think we're all alluding to in our discussions is the value of partnerships. Wisconsin, our network is definitely a public-private partnership network. It has been for a long time, and it will no doubt continue to be that. Our partners that we find most critical as it relates to managing the broadband aspects of the work here are the Department of Administration, and specifically within that, the Division of Enterprise Technology. Another key partner is the Public Service Commission, which is the body that gathers both the Universal Service Fund monies, which we leverage for our projects, but also houses the new state broadband office. So we work a lot with them as well. One of the things that I would I'd call out in particular is that relationship with the DOA DET. While I serve as the CIO for the State Education Agency, DOA has a CIO as well that works across all of the cabinet agencies in Wisconsin. And that gentleman's name is David Cadigal, and I work very, very closely with David. One of the interesting things I can say in terms of is providing an example of how strong the partnership is, David and I, or David's team and our team, will do these kinds of presentations together, and oftentimes we're in front of state groups. When we're having those conversations, if David goes first, he often tells the story of what schools need and libraries need, even before I do, which is, and he does not have necessarily a strong K-12 or library background, but it is emblematic of how important those relationships are, and I'm really honored to have him as a partner. The other interesting thing I would just point out is, as Christine mentioned, the Department of Education here, known as the Department of Public Instruction, is also the state library agency. And as Christina noted, my particular title, I serve as the chief officer for the State Library Agency of Wisconsin. And it's been another wonderful opportunity to discuss how some of these solutions that we're talking about regarding digital and learning manifest across both K-12 and the public library spaces. Libraries really do espouse the concept of lifelong learning, and it's been a real pleasure to be able to bring those two pieces together. The BadgerNet, as I mentioned, is a public-private partnership that is our state network. I'll mention this in a second, but the network does serve hundreds of school districts across the state, as well as hundreds of libraries. It also serves the hundreds of locations across the state in terms of state offices and other state kinds of resource locations. The contract just came up in 20. They worked on it for probably a good 18 months, as you can well understand. State procurements take a long time, especially things of this scale. But in 2016, we did get a new contract, and that contract calls for gigabit level service at $250 a month, 100 meg service at $100 a month. And when you compare it to the previous contract, it truly is a 10x improvement in terms of bandwidth without any cost increase whatsoever. The negotiations, I firmly credit DOA DET for getting us the deal that we all needed. And we're very, very pleased with the outcome. The other thing that's important in our network is to understand that our contract is for access. Internet service is actually on top of that. And the new BadgerNet allows for a continuation of a pricing model that had become very familiar through the primary internet service provider in the state, WiskNet. And they are now a subcontractor as a partner in this contract. And the nice thing about the way they've priced their services is that it's based on enrollment and not demand, so that there is no incentive essentially or disincentive to use more broadband. So we're really pleased with the access. We're really pleased with the rates, and we're really pleased with the fact that the ISPs are engaged, who are engaged with the new contract. Another thing I would point out in terms of just an update in terms of the investments that we've made is the investment that David and his team provided back in 2014 to all the libraries. We took $4 million and we lit up fiber in essentially all the libraries. There are a few that were incredibly hard to reach libraries, but roughly 350 of the 380 libraries now have fiber connections. And that really led the way to getting ourselves to a position where we can take advantage of these new rates. On the school side, we're in the high 90% that have access to fiber now through either the network or one means or another. David's goal, of course, is to try to bring as many providers under that that network as he possibly can. One of the most recent programs and the things I'm going to cite now are manifested out of a 2015 advisory council that the assembly put together, the assembly leadership and our legislature put together around the state of rural education. We ended up buckling in also some of the needs of libraries into that conversation as well. But out of that that discussion came several different initiatives. One was a broadband expansion grant program, and the Public Service Commission does manage that particular program. The annual budget right now is $1.5 million, and they've had 42 grantees today. But that was the fund has been increased and will be increased, and I'll mention that in a second. Eligible applicants include any of those for-profit or not-for-profits, including cooperatives. Telecommunications utilities can be involved. Cities, villages, towns, any kind of municipality can be involved as long as it's a joint venture with a telecom utility of some sort. School districts certainly can be partners within those initiatives, so they, if needed, they can be a part of that conversation too. In 2016, there was another study committee that looked specifically at rural broadband, and out of that and statewide listening sessions that were held all over, the governor did propose some additional funding in the FY18-19 biennial budget. Those changes include adding an additional $15.5 million from some surplus funds that were available. We're also targeting these grants in such a way that they complement the CAF2 investments that providers here in Wisconsin have accepted. Wisconsin was the second largest CAF2 recipient in of all the 50 states, second only to California. There were roughly, those providers are roughly planning to spend $600 million over the next 5 years on CAF2. One of the things, though, that the grant program has highlighted as a criterion for applicants, though, is this notion of being able to make a case that using those grants will increase the opportunity for students to have home access. So we're excited about that as being a formal part of the grant program now. Another initiative that was cited, that was implemented, and our network, our consortial network is managed through the TEACH program over at DOADT, and they have historically had some grant programs that they were able to administer in the early days. Those went on hiatus for quite some time. And then out of this joint task force on rural schools, they came up again with some new ideas for funding. And the focus there is on a couple of different funding sources. are topics for funding. One is training for teachers. The other is some infrastructure. These are targeted to small and rural parts of the state. Again, the thought being, if anybody needs digital, they certainly do in rural parts of the state, just to address issues of equity that might not exist in more urban populations, where you've got simply have more, say, teachers who are certified to teach certain kinds of courses. So needing digital is something that resonates with the rural parts of the state more than anything. So you can see the criterion there. The two grant types are the training, which we have $1.5 million that we can use each fiscal year. That we're right now we're working with DOA on trying to get some of that moving toward more embedded professional development experiences, which we know reflect best practices around how to do professional development. We're also taking this and aligning it with our ESSA plan, having it complement the ESSA work as well. The infrastructure grants in FY17 will have an additional $6 million added. So there should be a total of, in FY17, $13.5 million available for them. And then into FY19, there would be $7.5 million. Last year, when we had our first round of these grants, we really focused on complementing Category 2 for E-rate. So essentially, if a small and rural district wanted to invest in something that was Category 2 eligible, the grants would help offset and basically make it cost-free for them. The FY18 program adds some additional ideas to the mix in terms of eligible topics. One being mobile hotspots for buses or hotspot checkouts from school libraries. The other being trying to focus on we actually had a legislative council study that looked at data privacy issues. And out of that, one of the things that we're trying to invest more in is resources available for school districts to address those issues through things like network security projects. Just a few other highlights that I would point out. We did release, and I think Christine posted it up there, but we did recently update our statewide digital learning plan. We released our first edition of that in 2012. We had always traditionally required school districts to do plans, but the state had never really done one. So we took that on in 2012, and then last year in 2016, we updated that plan. We did adopt the Future Ready framework as a model for doing that plan. We like the tool set that comes with it that can allow school districts to do their own planning in a strategic way. So everything that we're doing around digital learning plan is within that framework. We're wrapping all of our strategy in that, including some of the work we're doing around system integration, data systems, some of the items that the Michigan folks were referencing as well. We've also finished our plan. We're going to be one of the last states to actually post this thing up there officially, but we're at that place where internally we've got our language pretty much locked down for it. And we are taking that digital learning plan and we are linking it directly to the ESSA components. We're going to put some guidance together on the how different funding sources, both from federal and state levels, like those TEACH grants and the Every Student Succeeds Act money and some of the other sources that school districts have. We're going to try to create a roadmap for school districts so they can see what fund sources they can use for the different topics within the gears of our Future Ready framework. The other thing I would I'd point out is we have partnered with Education Superhighway on some things. Our Compare and Connect tool is a great pricing tool for school districts. We believe they're a terrific partner to work with. And then right now we're also looking at how to collaborate with our partners, particularly the Public Service Commission and some of those private sector providers, to build mechanisms for school districts to build awareness about what kinds of internet services are available at the local level through different kinds of web tools that folks can do some research on. I'd like to build some of that process right into the enrollment and registration process during the beginning of the school year as well. We know that's the time to kind of hit folks with all of that. And then trying to leverage to some of the subsidy programs, whether they're Lifeline-like or not. So just a few other kind of broad brush things to pay attention to, and then I'll pause now and take any questions.
Yeah, that was great, Kurt. Thank you. A lot going on in Wisconsin. I appreciate the fact, I know you feel like, I think your ESSA plan is on the back end of people submitting, although it seems like lots of states are updating what they originally submitted. So you align, could you just expand a little bit on how you align the digital learning, the ESSA planning with the digital learning plan?
Yeah, sure. I mean, essentially, I think, you know, I take the look that if you look at any one of the titles, Title 1, 2, 3, 4, they all have an opportunity for us to connect our digital learning plan into them, whether it's around data privacy and security issues, you know, helping folks integrate digital citizenship into their curriculum, the whole notion of leveraging technology to enable personalization of learning. I mean, all of those things are written into each one of those, in one way, shape, or form, written into each one of those titles. And we're taking very explicit language from our digital learning plan and putting that in the plan language. So it's very direct. When people are submitting their plans at the district level, we're pointing them right to the future ready tools and saying, hey, you do it this way and it's good. We know it's good.
Right. Great. And there's a quick question in the chat about your professional development. I'd ask that maybe you can respond in the chat about how you're supporting the PD. So we will let folks wrap up at the top of the hour. So I want to encourage everyone to post questions in the chat. We also have the link to the community so that you can include that as well. And we can either connect you directly, folks' emails and Twitter handles are here, and you can access their website. So we encourage you to reach out. We can also reach out through the community itself. And EdWeb has a new evaluation tool. So CETA has been partnering with EdWeb. We appreciate their support. They do ask about the webinar evaluation. This is also related to teacher effectiveness and the continuing education credit. So if you have a few minutes to just let us know what you thought about the content and access today, that would be great. The link was just posted in the chat. And I want to thank again to AT&T that were able to sponsor this webinar and has been a long-term supporter of our work. Again, I'm going to go back actually to our presenters because all of these folks, as you can see, have a lot going on. They're extremely busy. Kurt left a very busy day in the office to be able to support this. And CETA is only as strong as our members and their willingness to share with each other and to learn from one another and to be able to plan and present. It does take quite a bit of time out of their very busy schedule. So I want to thank them publicly for that.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.